Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning. Today, we're celebrating Vaisakh, marking the Buddha's birth. Some Buddhist traditions celebrate this on April 8th, April 8th every year. And in our lineage, we're a little bit looser with that date. We usually choose a date in April or early May, aiming for a date that the Dharma school children can attend. This is very much a ceremony where we have our children and our parents with us, celebrating the birth of the baby Buddha. It took some time to reimagine this ceremony such that it could be done with only three people here physically. It's designed so that the whole Sangha participates. Everyone is part of the procession and has an opportunity to come up and pour sweet tea over the baby Buddha. In the bower behind me, there's a small statue with a little baby Buddha with one hand pointing up and one hand pointing down. Very symbolic. The Buddha's birthday celebrations are found both in the Keizan Shingi, a book of the liturgical cycle and ceremony instruction that Keizan wrote many centuries ago, and also in the Gyoji Kihan, which is a Soto school book of ceremonies. And our version incorporates the holy day of Vaisakh, the song that we sang first, and it's from the Jodo Shinshu songbook. And with our ceremony, we have that long, beautiful echo that Genko sang. So in the blurb for this week, I wrote that the Buddha's birth is an event that has many stories associated with it. And that today, I wanted to talk about stories and storytelling in our tradition. So in addition to serving as a priest here at Dharma Rain, I also serve at Wai East Zen Center, who had, has, and will have a physical location in Sandy, Oregon. And recently I gave a talk there that referenced a story that Kyogen used to tell. And some of you may know this story. It's a story about a vexing day of climbing Black Butte, hoping to get a photo of the abbey. His boots are one size too big, and they went the wrong direction and went up the wrong way, and it took much longer than expected. And he had a hard time coming back down and went in the wrong direction and walked a lot longer than he really had planned on in those boots that were too big. And the next day, being frustrated and cranky, Roshi Kennett told him to look up. And he experienced a great shift in that looking up. And as he describes it, he ended up under a table laughing his fool head off. And Kyogen was a great storyteller. He taught through story. And as one of his students, it was usually up to me to determine what the point of his story was. I had to figure out what he was trying to teach me. And rarely did he ever say anything directly. Sometimes it would take days. Sometimes even now, I'll stop and think, ah, that's what he was trying to say. Okay. Sometimes it takes me a while. So there is no one story of the Buddha's birth, just as there is no one single story about his life, no one story about his teachings, and no one story about his death, no one story about his previous lives. There is no one single century that it is agreed upon in which he lived. 4th century BCE, 5th century BCE. Either way, it was a long time ago. And the stories we have have been told and retold through countless ages and cultures and languages. So no one single story, no single definitive story, but among the stories of the Buddha's birth, there are similarities and commonalities. It's said that his mother, Queen Maya, was pregnant for 10 months. She gives birth in these stories and then passes away 7 days later. The birth is in a grove surrounded by gods and celestial beings, trees and tree spirits. It is said that the birth was painless and occurred through Queen Maya's side. Two streams of water poured from the sky to wash the baby Buddha, one warm and one cool. And it's said that after he was born, he took 7 steps. Or 7 steps in each of the cardinal directions, or 7 steps in the 10 directions. And he made a great proclamation, his first lion's roar, something along the lines of, "Below heaven and above earth, I alone am the world honored one." Or, "I am chief in the world, supreme in the world, eldest in the world. This is my last birth. There will be henceforth for me no more re-becoming." Or, "I am worthy of the offerings of gods and humans. I am the supreme being on this earth. This is my last birth, where I shall uproot birth, old age, sickness, and death. I will be supreme among all sentient beings. I will subjugate Mara and his army. I will cause great rain clouds of the Dharma to shower down on all hell beings, extinguishing the fires of hell and filling the beings there with happiness. All sentient beings will look up to me." It's quite a proclamation. And what these points add up to is that this is a miraculous birth. A celebrated birth. But when you think about it, isn't every birth miraculous? What happens if you look around this room or look around your Zoom screens at the faces here and imagine each face you see as a newborn baby? They once were. We once were. What happens? Do you smile? Does your heart soften? Miraculous. Dogen wrote many jodo, or many short teachings over the years that had to do with the Buddha's birthday. And this is one of them. "Our Buddha Tathagata was born today and at once took 7 steps in all 10 directions. Who knows that with each step he gave birth to many Buddhas? These Buddhas are simply transmitting today's voice with the same life, same place, and same name in the past, future, and present. Homage to Shakyamuni Buddha. We pour fragrant water over the head of the statue of the baby Buddha to bathe our elder brother. This is the principle of bathing the newborn one. How do we conduct this ceremony of bathing? For a long time, our Buddha has bathed the assembly of monks. Today, the assembly of monks pours water on our Buddha." After a pause, Dogen said, "Great assembly, let's go together to the Buddha hall and bathe our Buddha." Dogen descended from his seat. And some of the jodo he's written over the years, some are serious and some have a playful teasing tone, picking up on this energy of childishness, of newness. But in the one I read, there's this sense of family, of community, of one of us. But my point today is that today we celebrate the Buddha's birth, this miraculous birth, and we celebrate the story of his birth. It's through story that we find meaning. And it's through the story of the Buddha's birth that we find meaning. Different people will focus on different aspects. What is important to you? What symbols stand out to you? Where do you see yourself in this? And in many stories, there are more characters than just Maya and the small baby Buddha who are participating in this story, the spirits, the Buddha's father, the retainers, the everyone, hundreds and hundreds of people. So who do you relate to most in these characters? It is through story and finding meaning that we try to make sense of an unpredictable world. And Zen is full of stories. The stories are relational and they connect. You can see this in the koans of the Zen literature, the master and student meeting and having a conversation. And maybe there's a question and an answer, and then a question and then an answer, and a question and an answer, and all of a sudden somebody's enlightened. But that conversation could take years, and that relationship between that master and that student could evolve and mature over years. So at the end, they understand each other. They see the same view from the same perspective. We see this in Keizan Zenka Roku, where he tells the stories of our lineage. Those who have transmitted this Dharma down to us. And it said that you can read the stories in the Zenka Roku and find yourself in there somewhere. One of those masters had the same question that you did. One of those masters encountered the same obstacles that you did. And I know I've found some of those old ones that I go, uh-huh, mm-hmm, I know that one. I know that one. We still do this here at Dharma Rain, this sharing of stories. We do this in the term student program in the fall, telling our life stories to each other. We do this in the term student in the spring, telling our stories in a different way, through Dharma, but still very personal. We share stories in the prison group, in the 7-Up group, in taking your seat. And in Zen, we tend to relate to the Buddha more as teacher, as family, than as some otherworldly savior. Cosmic Buddha is often referenced, but the one we talk about most is the one that is close, that is family, intimate and imminent. So in the Zenka Roku, Keizan writes about Shakyamuni Buddha. He's writing about Shakyamuni's enlightenment, not his birth. But he starts off, Shakyamuni Buddha saw the morning star and was enlightened, and he said, I and the great earth and beings simultaneously achieve the way. That's very close to these phrases that the Buddha said at his birth. Birth and enlightenment perhaps aren't that different. And in the Zenka Roku, Keizan writes, this is he's writing as the older adult Buddha. From that time on, for 49 years, he did not spend a day alone, but preached the Dharma for the assembly constantly. He was never without a robe and a begging bowl. During that time, he preached to the assembly more than 360 times. Later, he transmitted the treasury of the eye of the true Dharma to Mahakashapa, and it has been passed down from Mahakashapa through generation after generation to the present. Truly, it has been transmitted through India, China, and Japan, where the practice of the true Dharma is based on it. The practices of his lifetime are the standard for his descendants. Even though he possessed the 32 marks and 80 minor marks, he certainly looked like an ordinary old monk and was no different from other people. Therefore, after his appearance in the world throughout the three times of the true Dharma, counterfeit Dharma, and the present collapsed Dharma, those who emulate his teaching and conduct model themselves on his deportment, use what he used, and each moment while walking about, standing in place, sitting or lying down, do as the Buddha did. Buddha after Buddha and patriarch after patriarch have simply transmitted this so that the true Dharma is not extinguished. And this event clearly indicates this. Even though the method of expression, various stories, figures of speech and words, was different on the more than 360 occasions during the 49 years, they are nothing more than the expression of this principle. So Keizan, in writing about the Buddha, writes about him in very ordinary ways, very human ways. And this is the Buddha that Zen reveres, this ordinary Buddha, this ordinary mind, which is also this miraculous mind. So it's through our stories and our ceremonies, rich in symbolism, that we remain connected to this being, this person who was born, lived, was enlightened, and died so long ago. We mark the important events of his life because they are important events in any life. They are important events in our lives. And we can see ourselves in his story. We tell stories to mark significant events, to mark our losses, to teach important points about life and living. And Kyogen, teaching through story, trusted his students to find themselves in his stories. He never decided ahead of time what points would resonate, which characters the student would identify with. Although he did choose the story to fit the situation the student was in. He trusted us to find the patterns of relationship, notice the places of transition or emphasis, and investigate for ourselves what meaning might be found. For meaning or symbol to be explained and taught as fact begins to move towards doctrine. And I'm not that interested in doctrine. I'm interested in meaning and relationship and what is alive in this very moment. I'm going to leave you with a poem by Padre Gotuma that was given to me a few months ago. It usually lives on a bulletin board in my room, so I can read it often. And it's called Narrative Theology Number 1. And it goes like this. And I said to him, are there answers to all of this? And he said, the answer is in a story, and the story is being told. And I said, but there is so much pain. And she answered, plainly, pain will happen. Then I said, will I ever find meaning? And they said, you will find meaning where you give meaning. The answer is in the story, and the story isn't finished. And that's my talk for today. It's kind of short, but if you have questions or comments, I'd be happy to hear them. And Ember's helping out on the tech side, so.
Yes. Hello. It's good to see everyone. If you have any questions or comments, I don't think you can hear me very well. If you have any questions or comments, please use the chat box. I'm going to try to give everybody an opportunity to read their question. If it doesn't work out, then I'll read it for you. I'm going to go ahead and allow people to unmute themselves. So, Chris, you're up first.
Hi. I'm wondering about misunderstanding stories or sort of getting stuck in them.
So your question is about misunderstanding stories or getting stuck in them. And are you asking about internal stories, internal narrative, or stories you hear from teachers or teachings or others?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Like when now you remember a story from Kyogen and think, oh, that's what you meant.
Uh-huh.
Then how do you know?
I hold his stories lightly and dearly and have long experience of going to Sanzen and hearing a story and just staring at him in response. I have no idea how to even, what are you talking about? And he would just sit and watch. And he would watch me wrestle with this story. And sometimes I would leave without even responding. And later, somebody would say something. I'd go, ah. Or I would see something and go, ah. Or there'd be an internal shift. I'd go, ah. Oftentimes I never went back and said, oh, is this what you mean? I never asked for verification. But I just watched and trusted that internal sense of there's something I can learn here. And I watched that internal sense of when I had that sense of, ah, oh, that's what he meant. Was there a sense of release and relief and relaxation? And ease? Or was there a sense of tightening and confusion and grasping and concretizing and clinging? And he could often see that relaxation, whatever I was chewing on at the moment. And so the next time I would go in with a different question and he'd tell me a different story and I'd have to do this all over again. What in the world is he talking about? But I never held on to the stories as this is the capital T truth that will be unchanging forever. And I never held on to my view as, oh, this is the right view that I will have forever. This is my view and my understanding right now, and it will change. And so whatever story you encounter, your view of it will be whatever it is in the moment, and it will change. As you grow and mature in practice and experience life and do all of the things that we do to encounter the world and learn from the world. And so just give that space and time. And when you're caught in a story, know it as being caught in a story. That in itself helps move things along.
Patrick, you're up.
Thank you for your Dhamma talk, Joshin. I think you kind of touched on this already, but I was kind of looking through the Lotus Sutra, and there's also a non-ordinary Buddha. And I could relate to the ordinary Buddha. It seems accessible as a family member, but how would you advise us to relate to the non-ordinary?
That's a trickier one. And it's a personal one, because even in doing a practice that is close, we come up against that which is vast, that which is bigger than us, that which is unnamed and unnameable. And yet, there's a relationship there. It's not a nothing or an absence, but it's also not definitive. And part of the tricky part of relating to that other Buddha, the vast Buddha, the cosmic Buddha, the one that shows up in the Lotus Sutra and the other Mahayana sutras, like, have your own process of relating to that and figuring that out. It's going to be different for everyone, because everybody comes to this with some different impression that came from previous encounters with religion or previous encounters with secular ideas of what it is that is greater than we are. Is it something we can trust? Is it something we can encounter? Is it something that's going to tell us that we have to be a certain way or do a certain thing? Your relationship to this is your relationship to this, and it will change. And the beautiful thing about encountering this idea of that Buddha which is bigger is that that Buddha which is bigger can put up with being doubted and tested and prodded and questioned. And doing all of that is important in developing that relationship to it and that trust.
Thank you.
I'm not going to give you an answer there, but hopefully that works.
Thank you.
We have a request from Lindsay to share the poem and attribution again.
Okay. I'll read it again, and then afterwards I'll ask Bujaku to put it on the blog, if that's okay. Will that work for you? So this is from Padre Gotuma. It's T-U-O-M-A is the last bit. It's called Narrative Theology Number 1. And I'll read it one more time, because I love it. And I said to him, are there answers to all of this? And he said, the answer is in a story, and the story is being told. And I said, but there is so much pain. And she answered, plainly, pain will happen. Then I said, will I ever find meaning? And they said, you will find meaning where you give meaning. The answer is in the story, and the story isn't finished. So Padre Gotuma is a Christian theologian and poet, and has been involved in working with the conflict in Ireland between the Catholics and the Protestants, doing conflict resolution. And I read through some of his other work that's online last night and was just blown away by it. This is a fellow I'm going to do some more reading of his works. It's quite beautiful. quite touching. And so I'll pass that along to Fu to put up on the blog so you can get the spelling of his name and look him up and read his works.
Joan has a reflection. Joan, would you like to share? I unmuted you. Let me try again. I'm going to unmute you. Maybe not. I'll say it for you. No question, just a reflection. Your teachings mirror your teacher's teachings.
I think that's probably the highest praise I can receive. Thank you.
We also have a comment from Ron, I believe, Ronald. He complimented your answer to, I believe, Patrick's question. He said, what a beautiful answer.
Thank you.
And up next, we have a question from David. David, you're up.
Hi, thank you for your talk. I was just wondering about when working with the story, how to tell the difference between sort of seeing what I want to see in the story versus allowing it to challenge me.
You have to be willing to be challenged. There are parts of stories that we like and we retell again and again. And there are parts of stories that we don't particularly like or we question that will push us to understand more. I had a piece in my notes. I didn't read it. You know, part of this story of the Buddha's birth that I question, that I look at. And there's a piece talking about the Buddha's mother. It says, monks, you may think it was because of the Bodhisattva, meaning the baby Buddha, that Maya Devi died. But you should not look upon things that way, since she had reached the maximum extent of her lifespan. Monks, 7 days after the bodhisattvas of the past were born, their mothers also died. And why is that? Because once a bodhisattva is born and has grown up, it would destroy his mother's heart if he were to renounce his home. And I read that and I think, well, in the birth story in the Christian tradition, they got to keep their mother. How come we don't get to keep our mother? I don't particularly like that part of the Buddha story and wish it would be different. And I can either accept it as, you know, just part of it and bristle, or I can inquire about it, read more about it, understand it, understand internally why I respond the way I do to it. And in doing so, learn more about both myself and the story. And as that understanding develops, the relationship to the story changes. So when it's your turn to tell the story, and you get to decide what points to keep and what points to change and what points to leave out, that says something about you as much as it says something about the story. And this is how these stories develop and change over centuries and cultures. We each add something and we each drop something.
Thank you.
We've come to the end of our list.
All right. Any further questions or comments? Anybody in the room want to say anything?
I have a comment to that last.
Okay.
It occurs to me that all of us end up losing our mothers.
Yep.
So you and I both have lost mothers.
Yep.
And eventually we all do. And I think in many ways, mothers all lose their children, as they do. They go away. They start their own life. And so there is a truth there that I think is that is valid. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy truth sometimes,
nope.
But it is there.
Yeah. Thank you. I think it'll be five years this June that my mother passed away, and I'm still trying to figure out what that means. I'm still trying to figure out who I am in relationship to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Are we good?